The term that's commonly used regarding the rendition process is extraordinary rendition. However, it's a term that I don't agree with in its essence, because in order for there to be extraordinary rendition, it means that there has to be a regular rendition that is acceptable. Now, from my own studies and what's generally accepted, is that there are only two countries in the world that have ever considered rendition an acceptable process. And that they are Israel and the US. No other country in the world recognizes rendition as a legitimate means of transporting an individual from one territorial jurisdiction to another. The only legitimate means are extradition and deportation. There are no other forms of transferring individuals. So when the term extraordinary rendition is used, it actually in a way acquiesces rendition in and of itself. And so, you know, from its essence, I disagree with that term. But rendition is essentially the transfer of an individual from one country to another without any due process. And detention without trial is a very destructive one. It's designed to destroy the spirit. It's designed to destroy hope. It's designed to destroy any sense of justice, because you're being detained by a power who is supposed to be the ultimate authority. And as far as they're concerned, you are the recipient of their justice. As President Bush had said at the time, that these people are now getting justice in Guantanamo Bay. The reality is, for us as Muslims, it's twofold. One is that we're, of course, human beings, and we're subjected to any of those emotions that any human being will feel. But at the same time, imprisonment for us through the stories of the Prophet Joseph or Yusuf alayhi salam are replete with a person being held for something he didn't do, for a crime he didn't commit, but he has to pass through that process. And once he passes through that process, it makes him understand the reason for which he's being placed upon this earth. So for me, and I would speak of most of the prisoners who've gone through this process, who are all Muslim, they have found refuge in their faith in this. It has made them stronger, and they've come out of these prisons, those who've come out as stronger people, better examples for mankind and for Muslims in particular. Having said that, I saw two people being beaten to death. I saw people lose their mentality, lose their mind, lose their mental state. I saw people brought in at the age of 12 years old, all the way to the age of over 100 years old. People who had lost their limbs, and I even heard the screams of a woman in Bagram being tortured by the Americans. So the effects of all of this on me as an individual are that it has now shaped my life. I am who I am now because of that experience. And that has been also the experience of the majority of the people who have been affected by this entire process.
It should be a headline grabber, and it was a story that I put out into the Sunday Express along with Gordon Thomas, who's a specialist in intelligence stories. And we put this out in 2003, and the media followed the denials of the ambassador who was then in Washington, the British ambassador, when we said that there were these rendition flights taking place, and Diego Garcia was one of these ghost prisons. He said that this was in the realms of fantasy and not true. And unfortunately, the media accepted his word and stopped digging. Well, back in 2003, we actually named three or four Muslims who had been taken there and were held, we believe, on US naval brigs in the end, on floating ships. And I can't recall their names, but George Bush talked about them 5-6 years down the line, saying, yes, we do have these people in there now in Guantanamo Bay. And I contacted the journalists who had so blindly followed the US ambassador, Britain's ambassador in Washington, and said, I'm not asking you to apologize to me, but why don't you get in touch with the Foreign Office and ask them why they misled you? And I didn't get a response to that.
One of the arguments for rendition is that the people that are being detained are these new breed of international terrorists that have to be given an alternative legal system in order to be correctly detained or interrogated, mm-hmm. or whatever they want to do with them. But I think Guantanamo in itself is an evidence against that. When you consider that at one stage there were just over 1,000 people in Guantanamo, and now there are only, I think, just over 200. 800 people have been released without charge, without any trial, mostly back to their countries of origin. How do you have a system where essentially people can just be picked up from one place and transferred to another, and they've never been charged with any crime? And they've been released after years and years and years of detention without ever having been charged. So I think the entire process is inherently flawed. And even if they were to, say, capture one or two people that, you know, they believe were, you know, correctly identified, there is an entire legal process that could be turned to in order to make sure that these people ended up in front of their courts anyway. So I think the excuse that national security debates have to be used in order to essentially circumvent the law are completely flawed.
For a start off, we have to go right to the top, to George W. Bush. And he said, you know, that as he described it, it was his watch. Well, if he's going to use a military description like that, and he was the military commander-in-chief, that is where the buck stops. Not some minor grunt on the ground. This should go right to the very top, to the man who maybe didn't issue the orders directly, but certainly rubber-stamped them. And from the very top, it should then go down to the people who did give the orders. And again, not the lowly foot soldiers. This should go to the head of CIA, the director of CIA, the director of the FBI. And we're talking now as though it's over, that this period is gone, but it's still very much a live period. There are still thousands of people unaccounted for in who've been swept up in the war on terror. And we still don't know where they are. We still don't know where America keeps its female enemy combatants. If you talk to the Pentagon, which I have done frequently to try and get to the bottom of this, I am... continually blocked in my inquiries.
Over the course of our work, what we found is that the early renditions that took place, because nobody knew what rendition was really in terms of the context of the war on terror, we didn't realize what was happening to individuals. All of a sudden, all of these people were just going missing. They'd get picked up by the Pakistani security agencies, and then that would be the end of it. Nobody would hear about where they were, what was going on with them. It was only really when the International Committee of the Red Cross started finding its way into certain prisons in Afghanistan and started releasing information from Guantanamo that we began to find out that, look, there's a whole series of people that went missing in Pakistan, and these people now have ended up in Guantanamo. How did that happen? And so what took place was a kind of a reverse process to figure out what rendition was. So then you had these plane spotters. Essentially, it was the first time that plane spotting actually became, you know, something quite interesting, because you had all of these people looking at flight logs, looking at tail numbers, figuring out that, okay, this plane went from Pakistan to Afghanistan to Ireland to Spain to Portugal onto Guantanamo Bay, and you had this amazing movement where a lot of individuals were cataloging the various tail numbers and figuring out that the Americans were transporting a lot of individuals around the world using these rendition flights.
Well, it wasn't so much when did they become aware, when did they start writing about it. I think the media were aware from about 5-6 years ago, but it's only recently that they've really taken it on board. And in fact, there's now a Hollywood film called Rendition.
And then with the release of detainees slowly, we started finding out the details of how these things happened. So we found out that people like Binyam Muhammad were captured in Pakistan, they were tortured and abused there. Then they were sent on rendition flights to Morocco, where, you know, horrible things took place to them. They were questioned by the Moroccan officials at the behest of the Americans and the British, sent back to Afghanistan and then on to Guantanamo Bay.
The biggest case in the rendition story that demonstrates how the argument that rendition somehow is necessary, even if it's abhorrent, to protect innocent lives, is demonstrated in the case of Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi. He was a man who was said to be the most senior ranking member of Al-Qaeda, captured in 2002. He was taken to a series of secret detention sites, which then meant he was eventually sent to Egypt. And in Egypt, he was tortured by third-party torturers. And of course, people know within the Middle Eastern world that Egypt has almost mastered the arts of torture. Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi was waterboarded, he was electrocuted, there were many other techniques carried out against him. And during his interrogations, he admitted, quote-unquote, that he was working with Saddam Hussein on obtaining weapons of mass destruction. This statement, or confession of his, was used by Colin Powell in 2003 when he went to the UN Security Council to argue for a case of war in Iraq, saying that this Al-Qaeda member has admitted that he was working on obtaining WMD from Saddam Hussein. They invaded Iraq, and how many hundreds of thousands of people died as a result of that? So where was this notion of saving innocent life by rendering somebody? A year later, Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi retracted that statement, and the Department of Defense accepted that he had fabricated the story to protect himself, and Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, after that, disappeared. He didn't go to Guantanamo. He died in a cell in Libya, where he was a dissident from. So the argument that people give that rendition can save lives is the biggest load of twaddle that exists. The reality is that rendition, through the case of Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, has caused the deaths of hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of lives.
Unfortunately, most roads lead back to Pakistan. And when someone is renditioned, it's not just a one-off occasion. Mohazambek, for instance, the director of cage prison, is a very high-profile ex-Guantanamo detainee, was kidnapped in the middle of the night from his home in Islamabad, and then he was renditioned to Kandahar, and then from Kandahar he was taken to Bagram, and then from Bagram he was taken to Guantanamo. So he was renditioned several times. With the case of Binyam Muhammad, he went through a horrendous route on the way to Guantanamo, which took him through Pakistan, Afghanistan, Morocco, and finally Guantanamo. Some of the men who ended up in Guantanamo couldn't even tell you where they were flown to, because most of them, you know, they were kept in these dark and secret prisons.
Well, I think the essence of this is that a lot of the war, I'm not saying the entirety, but a lot of the conflict that's taking place right now is based on grievance politics. And the more the Western world essentially subverts its own legal systems and its own political systems in order to counteract the threat of terrorism, the more justification will be given for those people who already dislike and despise what the Western world is doing. So it's really a self-fulfilling prophecy right now, the way that counterterrorism policies are being carried out, because the more you subjugate a community, and for the purpose of this discussion we'll call the Muslims an entire community, the more you criminalize them through legislation, the more they will feel aggrieved with you. And I think that the best thing that the Western world can do right now is to really rein back the extent of their counterterrorism legislation, go back to the principles of due process that they were once famous for, and really show that they are willing to actually turn to the law and remember what human rights actually are in order to defend themselves. And until they do that, they will never really have an argument in front of those people who are trying to attack them. And I think that in itself, if they were to carry out these things, that in itself would be the best way to defend themselves, because then they would actually be able to say that, look, you know, we are actually extending a hand here. We have realized what we've done wrong in the past, and we want to make amends for it. And, you know, we want you to essentially see that we're actually honest in the way that we're trying to deal with this. And I think that really, for me, would be true counterterrorism in its effort, really.
It all came to light, or a lot of the evidence came to light, by this international network of plane spotters. These are people who stand at airports very much like the train spotters at stations, and they religiously write down the serial numbers of planes that land and take off. And these people are fastidious in their detailing and chronicling and timing. Some people would rather cruelly call them anoraks, but because of their detail and their network, they were able to not only confirm that there were illegal CIA flights taking off and landing around the world, they were able to chart some of these ghost planes.
Rendition as an instrument did not begin with 9/11 and with the renditions to Afghanistan and Guantanamo Bay. If you look through certain cases before that, there's a case of Adolf Eichmann. The Israelis captured him in Argentina and rendered him in order to try him. Then you've got Carlos the Jackal. The Americans did the same with him. There's a few examples, but in very, very limited circumstances. And even the US courts and even the Israeli courts recognize that rendition in those situations for their legal systems had to be used in a very, very limited way, that it couldn't be used simply wherever they wanted to. So even though rendition had a history prior to 9/11, it was still very, very much limited in its scope. After 9/11, things changed completely. It got approval straight away, and the Americans essentially started rendering people wherever they wanted.
We've had more than three, four decades of so-called terrorism from the Irish problem. And there actually was a case where a suspected IRA terrorist was kidnapped and renditioned by MI6, and when he got to court, the judge threw the case out and said, we can't even hear this case because of the manner in which you brought him to court, which was illegal. So there was a mistrial, and the case, my understanding is that the case wasn't heard. Sadly, I think those days of upholding the law and within the legal framework have become blurred. And you have, as we've heard from the Iraq inquiry, lawmakers turned into lawbreakers to please or appease the demands of the Prime Minister or the President of the United States. But looking at the Irish situation, we had bombs going off in shopping centres, in Hyde Park, in many different public places, innocent people caught up and died in their adding up to thousands over the years in a so-called terrorist war, which was fueled by US dollars and very much supported, albeit maybe covertly, in some parts of US government circles. In fact, one story that I did in December 2001 was that in the wake of 9/11, there were Americans still fundraising for IRA dissident groups. So the rules of the game, I mean, all of this, you know, we're in new territory, where it's rubbish, absolute rubbish.
The reality of a rendition is that it's the devil of the detail that hasn't been mentioned. When Obama came into power, he said within a couple of days of his presidency that he would close down Guantanamo, that he would close down the secret detention sites run by the CIA, and that he would put an end to torture. Of course, that was the suggestion that that was the acceptance that torture then therefore must have been in practice for him to put an end to it. What he didn't mention was that rendition was something that was going to continue, and in fact rendition was something that began before September 11th. There are many cases of people being rendered through the CIA's secret detention program prior to 9/11. The difference is that the renditions would generally take place and then a person would be taken to a court where they would be prosecuted under whatever law existed. Now rendition is not to quote-unquote justice, but rendition to secret detention sites. The reality is that although Obama has seemingly put an end to this practice, there are two things. One is that he has already said that he will not prosecute any of those individuals from the CIA, and there were many who carried out waterboarding, and that those prosecutions will not happen, and that those people will get away scot-free. So basically we have people who have carried out torture, and in some cases murder, in the name of the United States government, who will get away scot-free. Then we have the realization that many of these individuals who were disappeared, or some who are still disappeared, were rendered through third-party proxy countries, whereby the US never carried out the torture themselves, but they sent the individual to a particular country.
Well, they're classified as victims by you and I, but not by the authorities. Nobody's apologized. Nobody has offered to compensate these people. There is a political sort of ostrich syndrome going on at the moment, where we know that sooner or later America, Britain and other governments who were involved in this activity, they are going to have to pay compensation, and I would imagine it will amount to many, many millions of pounds and dollars. Now, whether it happens within the next few years or the next decade, it is going to take a very long time. I mean, when you consider that US President Bill Clinton apologized in March 1999 for the disappearance of 300,000 Guatemalans from the 70s due to the black operations of the CIA. That took, you know, two decades. I think that we'll have a similar length of wait before these people really get justice. Whether they ever get closure is another thing.
And finally, of course, the reality is that the United States government have begun a new process which is targeted extrajudicial killings. So you don't have to detain the person anymore. You don't have to go through the whole process of the world calling you a torturer, because it's easier, more efficient to kill them. And to kill them with not just pilots who may come under under some sort of threat of being hit, but rather unmanned drone aircraft flying over Pakistan and Afghani airspace to target and kill individuals, which is much more expedient.